My son, the beloved, listen to him. Suddenly, when they looked around, they saw no one with them anymore, but only Jesus. Amen. I invite you to listen to the normal message of light and dark in this old gospel hymn. As a preschooler, she tried to explain something complicated to him in a way that he could understand. He listened politely and considered her explanation, and then with all the confidence and wisdom of a preschooler, he said something that has entered our family lore. That's just not the way it is in my world, Mimi. He's in his 20s now. And we all love to trot out this saying when we are faced with an unpleasant truth or an opinion that doesn't encompass our experience. I often repeat what I can still hear in my grandnephew's voice. So, when the scales tell me that not only have I not lost weight, I have gained some, I thrust that truth away and hear his little voice say, "That's not the way it is in my world." When I hear that women's hard-earned rights are being revoked, I want to echo his confidence. That's just not the way it is in my world. And when yet another reporter describes how our politicians are avoiding their responsibilities by attacking and demonizing each other and by making false dichotomies, my heart grieves as I say, "Please, God, that's just not the way it is in my world." When we insist on my world rather than the world, we lose the ability to see the world and truth as it is and as God would have it be. So many times our culture simply can't see for looking. Now, I know stress makes us all search our entire house for the glasses that are sitting on our head. Or panic that we've lost our keys when they're in our hand. And who hasn't looked for their phone when they're already using it? Oh, I'm so glad y'all have too. Thank you for that. We put what we need to take with us right by the door where we can't miss it. And then we miss it. We walk right by it in our haste to leave, don't even see it because we can't see for looking. This past Christmas, I searched high and low for the new Christmas topper that I had bought the previous year. Now, it shines light all over the tree, but also makes these joyous stars up on the ceiling. Both my sister with the wise grandson and my daughter, who actually discovered this treasure, have matching ones in their homes. So I really wanted to have his presence light up our house. I look for the light in the attic, in the closets, all my hidey holes, to no avail. Just before Christmas arrived, Guy offered to have a second look. Now, I am but 5'2". Guy is no longer a foot taller than me, but he walked out to the garage, where I had looked multiple times, and at his higher eye level, he immediately saw a small rectangular box wedged between the lawn sprays and the shipping boxes. It was turned not this way, you know, it was turned with the small side out. I'm justifying myself. So it was just a couple of inches wide. He recognized it as the missing tree light and brought it to me to put on the tree. I was delighted he found it, and I saw two ways I had overlooked it. First, I underlooked it. That rectangular box was nestled way too high for me. But secondly, I hadn't been looking for that kind of box. I was sure it was larger, square, probably white. If it had been a snake, it would have bitten me. But my eyes traveled right over it because I was under the delusion that I knew what to look for. We've all proven that statement. We can't see for looking. And today we are in esteemed company. Let's look again at today's story, which I have entitled, The Trying Trio at the Transfiguration. We've just read the story in Mark's setting, chapter 9. Jesus planned a getaway and took the usual three disciple buddies, the Trying Trio. Bless their hearts. They tried, they really did. They tried Jesus' patience. Anyway, the poor trying trio, Peter, James, John, and Jesus, went up on a high mountain on a retreat. Not just a mountain, a high mountain. Well, that seems redundant, so why describe the mountain as high? Y'all may not be familiar with this tradition from the Holiness Church, since some of Guy's West Virginia relatives still worship that way. I have a little story to remind you of, if you haven't heard it. The women don't cut their hair. You know, it's their crown. So instead of that, they pile it and arrange it, shift it all over their head as high as they can get it. And then they say, the higher the hair, the closer to God. Maybe it helped that they lived amongst mountains there, just as we do here. Anyone blessed to live among these glorious mountains knows that mountains, high mountains, evoke a holiness, a transcendence. The air is thinner, cleaner, refreshing, magical. It feels different. It is a thin place, a holy place, where we sense the power and the grace of the Almighty, even if we don't have a name for that spirit. We feast our eyes on the majesty of the sights, and we feel closer to something. In a Greg Larson Far Side cartoon, there are two ants, but today they're going to be three ants so that they match up the trying trio. So the three ants climb up on top of a toadstool to bask in the night sky. So picture that, three ants on a toadstool looking up at the sky. And one says to the other, just look at those stars. Makes you feel sort of small and insignificant. When we and ants make the effort to gain perspective, we see things differently and find ourselves reaching for connections with the mysterious. But like the trying trio, we often can't see for looking. To see more of the truth in the Transfiguration, let's look at how Mark prepares us for this in the preceding chapter, chapter 8. In verse 17, Jesus sounds like his patience has been tried and is now stretched thin. He asks, why are you talking about having no bread? Do you still not perceive or understand? Are your hearts hardened? You have eyes and fail to see. You have ears and fail to hear. Don't you remember I just broke five loaves for 5,000 with 12 baskets and leftovers, and 7 for 4,000 with 7 baskets in abundance. Don't you get it yet? And then in verse 22, just so we don't miss it, Jesus acts out what's about to happen with the blind man. People brought a blind man, someone, of course, who could not see, to Jesus in Bethesda. Jesus made a salve out of his spit and put it on the blind man's eyes. He asked him a question similar to the ones he had just asked his disciples. Can you see anything? The man looked up and said, I can see people, but they look like trees walking. In other words, he wasn't sure what he was seeing, and it wasn't yet clear to him. When Jesus laid his hands on those imperfect eyes again, the man looked intently. His sight was restored, and like Jimmy Cliff, he sang, I can see clearly now. With Jesus' help, he looked intently and could see clearly. Now that chapter finishes with a discussion of who Jesus really is. And then we come to our chapter where the same truths now come into focus. Up on a high mountain, Jesus visits with Elijah and Moses. The experience was so transforming that Jesus and his clothes shone with an incredibly white light. Peter, per usual, rushes in to put meaning to what they saw. Rabbi, it's good for us to be here. Let us make 3 dwellings, one for you, one for Moses, one for Elijah. He did not know what to say, for they were terrified. Now, as Millie reminded us not long ago, not knowing what to say never stopped Peter from speaking. He rightly infers that something holy has happened, so he reaches into his experience to understand. He remembers other times when people stacked rocks. You'll still see that here in the mountains. That signifies a thin place. He remembers that memorials were built at places where holy encounters occurred. He remembers that temples are built on holy ground. So he suggests they stay there and build a trio of memorials for Jesus, Moses, and Elijah. He tries to put structure around a truth he doesn't fully understand. He wants to define it by what he thinks he knows, and maybe he wants to contain it there. He thought he saw, but he couldn't see for looking. Like the trying trio, sometimes our limited experience, understanding, or study just aren't complete enough. I began my pilgrimage in a church that taught me that women had only a small, segregated spot to occupy. Thankfully, they also taught me to listen for God's voice and respond with Peter's enthusiasm. So when I heard God call me to be a minister, I blithely said yes. I went to school to prepare for seminary and joined a local church. That pastor would not even meet with me because I am female. He refused to recommend me to seminary. When I graduated from seminary, the seminary president in the receiving line congratulated my husband as the graduate instead of me. It gets worse. When I went to the state convention to get help being placed in a ministry position, they offered me a temporary job as a secretary during that woman's maternity leave. And that continued my whole career, but we won't go into that now. More than 40 years later, most eyes have become less blinded to God's truth that there is neither male nor female, that God created humanity as male and female, that God poured his spirit on the sons and daughters. But I use this example to remind us that we must constantly be clearing our eyes, our minds, our hearts to live in the light God, sometimes blindingly, shines our way. Too often, we can't see for looking, just like the trying trio, like Peter. I'm not sure what revelations make us uncomfortable here at Grace. What is it we would prefer to contain, to box in, to keep the way it's always been, to respond to in such a way as to explain it away? Where do we need new insight for our time of faithful service? Had Peter waited just another minute, he would have had a chance for a second shaded look to focus more intently. His lone limited experience and soul understanding might not have sent him to a comfortable answer. Here's what happens next. A cloud overshadowed them. And from the cloud, there came a voice. This is my son, the beloved. Listen to him. Suddenly, when they looked around, they saw no one with them anymore, but only Jesus. They went from blinding light to cloudy shade before they could really see. Perhaps like the Triune Trio, we found that we can't see in too much light. It's too uncomfortable. We shy away from it. So we wisely wear our caps shaped around our eyes. We put on our sunglasses. And when we're driving our car at sunset, we lower the visor. That way we block the overwhelming sunbeams and shade our eyes so we can properly see to drive forward. Then we're able to focus on the most important details of whatever truth is right in front of us. Only then can we interpret our sight, our lives, against the loving, gracious truth that is revealed in and conforms to Jesus. It isn't really about the light or the darkness. It's about seeing Jesus. From the cloud there came a voice. This is my son, the beloved. Listen to him. Suddenly, when they looked around, they saw no one. But only Jesus. Only Jesus. Amen.